Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
I've been rewatching the 2024 Texans season to get myself ready for the 2025 season, just kind of taking stock of some of the things that happened last year. What are the things that maybe I can spin forward, learn from? So we'll continue that game seven, or week seven rather, at Green Bay was the game that I watched most recently. Before I get there, we were talking about breaking bones, I think, at one point, because that was my first. I have never broken a bone. I've never had a surgery up until this past week.
Yeah.
And someone texted in, well, first and foremost, actually, I think Sean cared enough about this particular statement to come back up to the station and tell us in person that he had never broken a bone up until he said that he had never broken a bone.
And that'll do it.
Very quickly thereafter, boom, broken collarbone. Now, he was playing.
You and Figgy both coming in with casts
tomorrow. I forgot about that sound.
I'm sure he probably made that noise.
Which is funny about an injury. Yeah. But, yeah, he said that very quickly thereafter, a broken bone. Now, he was playing tackle football, so be like that sometimes. And from the 281, they said they made it out of their childhood without any significant injuries. But then they joined the Marines. And then they broke their wrist, dislocated their shoulder, broke their foot, and then broke their hand. So yeah. you covered the gamut. You basically caught up.
Join the Marines, break everything.
Yeah, yeah. That's like
that's a good endorsement.
Yeah, that's when you show up to the bar and like, hey, we already have two. Catch up. He's like, I got you. Break. Yeah. So yeah, shout out to you, and shout out to all the people who have managed to
break
not
bones.
Not break bones. If you've broken a bone, I guess shout out to you as well. You're still kicking and everything. All right. The rewatch, week seven at Green Bay, a 24-22 loss to the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because there's a few things that came through here. This was a Kamari Lassiter out game. So you had D'Angelo Ross starting at the cornerback on the, I guess, stage right, left side of the defense. What do you recall from this game?
I'm trying to make sure I have this right as I'm looking back on this game. And you can probably... help me because you just rewatched it as I was watching the Bear. But
I would like to talk about that at some point, but not right now.
I think this was the game when we came back on Monday and said, all right, about this offense. And I know we'd seen some signs. We'd talked about it when, you know, before you left. The offense was kind of showing us some things of it. But I think this was what pretty much solidified, boy, I don't know. You know, I don't know if this thing is going to be what we thought it was.
Which is interesting because they ran the ball decently well in this game with Joe Mixon, obviously. And to the point where I think C.J. Stroud had, I think, his least amount of passing yards headed into a half in this game. I believe it was 44, if memory serves me correctly. Yeah, 44 pass yards, the second fewest yards that he had in a single and a half in C.J.'s career to that point. And it's because they had been fairly successful running the football and doing what they needed to do as much as you, I guess, reasonably could expect to that point. The game started off, though, for me thinking about, D'Angelo Ross is out there for Kamari Lassiter. And I thought this would be insightful considering that Ross still has an opportunity of being cornerback three, for at least like your cornerback on the outside. And the very first play, D'Angelo Ross gets tripped up, falls down on an out. Just right at the cut, at the break, he just trips, and that's Romeo Doubs going across his face, 15-yard out, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, cool, here we go. Mm-hmm. And it's five-man pressure, they shrink the pocket, and it's just like, all right, well, this is going to be the case. And let me tell you, somebody who watched the entire game, it continued happening, where I go, I do know, and it's not very comfortable I am with D'Angelo Ross having to be your third kind of option after your starting cornerbacks on the outside. That still remains for me a place that I want to see some level of development for this Texans team.
And that's where we are again. We know what we have, and we know there might be a drop-off at some point. I do remember that. Obviously, there was also...
And there was more of them. Now, there was a Dontavian Wicks fade, or like go route that he got And it looked like, I was like, oh, well, D'Angelo Ross is the mark. And I was like, nah, actually, that one was a Kalen Bullock thing that I'll talk about.
I think
about
we talked about it that following week. We actually talked about that play. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because that was a Kalen Bullock. And that was really just this offense versus at the defense at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That was LaFleur actually having some good play calling, seeing, oh, this is cover two. We're going to run a seam route as well as this go. And we're going to hold that safety in. So that he can't get to the outside with this go route. But that's neither here nor there. Very soon in the game, speaking of cornerbacks, another dude who's just been really good, especially with his face to the offense, is Jalen Petrie. And this is cut two here, Fig, of the highlights. As very soon in the game, you were already able to continue what had been a run for Jordan Love at that point in the season of throwing at least an interception.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Petrie and Neville Hewitt combined to help this happen.
Kraft, the tight end, and Jacobs line up short side left. Three receivers wide side right. Empty backfield here on 3rd and 3 at the 50. Love looks it over. Hansen close to the line. Love takes the snap, fires, and it's picked off. Hewitt to his left, 40, 30, 20, cutting inside the 20 of Green Bay, and Neville's got the ball inside the 15-yard line on the pick.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard two names there. Hansen, as in Jake Hansen, and Neville Hewitt.
Correct. I'm glad you picked up where I was going there. I'm glad that you had the antennas working. That's right. And obviously, I think to start with, I want to acknowledge the fantastic play that Jalen Petrie made. This is like double outs from the two inside receivers, where the outside receiver is running a go route. I don't. Pardon me for not knowing what that particular route concept is, but that's what's happening here. And really, the read should be, hey, if the outside cornerback is staying with the outside route, okay, well then hit that inside out route.
Yeah.
And that's what Jordan Love was trying to do, except Jalen Petrie read him entirely and breaks on the ball, obviously breaks the pass up, and then Neville Hewitt catches kind of the ricochet, takes it the other way. He is so good, Petrie is, when he has an opportunity to play with his eyes on the defense. I think this is where him in coverage is still pretty good, more than we give him credit for at times. It's almost linebacker-like coverage where I was just going to say
it's a different kind of coverage.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, I'm going to line up on this slot or whomever and just blanket him. It's physicality, it's instincts, it's being able to get a hand on the ball, but not necessarily blanket a guy.
Right.
And that was exactly what happened right there.
And so I don't know if what that changes. Yeah. And I know Miko's defense is pretty locked in the ways that it plays, and it utilizes him really well. But I'm like, is there ways to maybe even accentuate that further? Just because it's just time and time again, you see how well he plays with that. But you mentioned one thing I wanted to get to, and I think we might talk about this even more as we continue on the show, is this is a game in which you didn't have that depth at linebacker.
No Toa Toa, no Al-Shaair.
Correct. Obviously no Chris
Harris was out. Yeah.
It's very early in the season. Mm-hmm. Any week before week 14 was early in the season last year when it came to Christian Harris. And so you had Neville Hewitt and you had Jake Hansen. I'll go ahead and spoil it watching the entirety of the game here. Admirable effort, but there is a clear, like, hey, these guys are replacement level. And I say that as respectfully as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited, though, that this year, the possibility is that you do not have an instance where you have a feeling of that is a replacement player at linebacker.
That is 100% where I was going. And now we don't know about Christian Harris. We'll find out. But you brought in EJ Speed. You got to figure Toa Toa. And he became quite an asset as the season progressed. So you've got some guys that can all of a sudden fill that void.
Yeah, and it was vital because
you would think.
The Packers ran the ball well in this game. Like they ran, I think, if memory serves, and I should have this in front of me, but of course, trying to run with a whole bunch of tabs at the same time has put me in a place where I'm not operating in the way that I need to. But I remember it was something like 6.3 yards per carry for Josh Jacobs in this game. Like very, very effective run the football. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say all of that by any means is the linebacking core, but there was a number of times where if they trigger in the way that I've seen Toa Toa trigger, if they're in the right places like Aziz tends to be, almost instinctively, you have significantly fewer, explosives that happen in that game.
12 carries, 76 yards, 6.3 average, and a long of 27 for Josh Jacobs. They actually held them in check rushing the ball as a team, but he got his.
This is an interesting question, circling back to Petrie before we move on here. Does Kelce go off against the Chiefs if Jalen Petrie is healthy?
Ooh, I don't think so.
I don't think he goes
off.
Yeah,
I don't think so either. You know, Kelce, you know, before and after that game was not nearly as explosive as he was against the Texans. So I don't think I think that's an easy answer.
Yeah, especially, yeah, again, if you're able to have kind of zone opportunities where, yes, Travis Kelce is then still very good, yeah, at finding spaces in the zone. But again, you have another guy who breaks incredibly well, especially when, mm-hmm, he's able to have eyes on the football, and Jalen Petrie.
And physical.
In that space. Yeah, and, mm-hmm, of course, yeah, like, Jimmy was doing a good job stepping in that space. But, I mean, again, I've been very fascinated by the places where Jalen Petrie is good. He is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
That shows up. You remember Green Bay muffing a punt in this one? Like, this was just a funny game to watch.
Yeah.
Up and down. But I hate to do this so much, but it was a huge thing in this season, mm-hmm, but also in this game. There were so many instances where I go, hey, there's meat left on the bone here with what we're doing here. And even when you had good plays, even when you were right, you were kind of wrong. There was a really good first down counter play that Bobby Slowick called, mm-hmm, and you had Dalton Schultz, I believe. Or no, you had Cade Stover, I think, who was in as a fullback. And the counterplay was good. It, you know, works out really well.
Mm-hmm.
But Cade Stover as the linebacker takes like a step and a half to the right before he goes on the counter. And Joe Mixon just like a half step.
Yeah.
And so you end up with a situation where at the line of scrimmage, when you get there, Joe Mixon is ahead of his blocker.
Oh, yeah.
And, mm-hmm, I'm like, either this is a lack of execution, where Stover maybe takes too big of a mm-hmm, you know, false step in order to get those linebackers to move, which they do,
mm-hmm,
or Joe Mixon, and I highly doubt that he's just like executing this counter step incorrectly. But I'm like, either way, it's either that or just this is the way the play is designed, and it's, mm-hmm, designed poorly for that blocker to get there before it. But either way, that all still falls on the coordinator and Bobby Slowick. And, yep, yes, I understand I'm in the place where I'm like, hey, look at Bobby Slowick, he did a bad job.
Yeah.
But the thought that I had with this was, these are the places that I think Nick Haley can be effective without, you know, without the pressures that I think would normally land on a first-time play caller in, oh, I need to make the right play in time. These are the things that preparation early on,
yeah,
you know, ahead of time in, you know, the play design of the play, but then also the emphasis that he has made on, hey, understanding the understanding what the intent of the play is, so, mm-hmm, that you execute the play to its purpose as opposed to just into the way that it's drawn. I think that these are the types of things that you'll see executed better, and you don't have instances like that where even if you have a good play, mm-hmm, you wring more out of it because it's thought well thought of.
What's been the catchword literally since Bobby Slowick departed and was let go? Technique. We've heard technique about the offensive line. We've heard technique from D'Amico Ryans just in general about how they have to do it on the practice field. What you're describing, what you're talking about, is the technique, and that goes from the offensive line into the backfield and the fullback in this case.
Yeah. A few more things that I wanted to mention in here. I mean, there's some other execution types things. There's a Will Anderson Jr. sack in this one. There is a Danielle Hunter sack, and there is a Stingley pass breakup. All of those big plays, and I mean, I could play them all. I could talk deeply about them. I think the point is just whenever you need a play, even when, you know, maybe you're not having the absolute best game, the big players show up on this defense.
Have to.
It's just the thing that they do. Mm-hmm. I love that about this defense. And then CJ was still making plays under real duress in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been actively, as kind of a overarching thing with this rewatch, waiting for where is the moment where I can intelligibly see, okay, the pressure is starting to crack CJ.
I think this was one of them. I said that at the very beginning. I mean, he threw for 86 yards.
Yes.
10 of 21. And
some of that is they just ran the football a whole bunch.
But also was sacked four times.
Yes, in the second half.
And hit, yep, a lot. And I think this was when we started to realize, or at least I did anyway, this is not working the way we thought it would in terms of just simple protection. I mean, CJ was truly running for his life back there, as we talked about at the end of the year too.
Yeah. And then that starts to happen. The offense stalling in the red area when they have, mm-hmm, an opportunity to maybe go up and put the game, kind of salt the game away a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you have the Green Bay 2-minute drill where you have, you know, a tight end and man coverage, 8 yards, you know, sit down route plus a missed tackle, which again comes back to those linebackers in the middle of the field,
mm-hmm,
13 yards. And then a Romeo Doubs slant on Sting, who gives him a good amount of cushion, which I didn't fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
There's 12 yards. Now you're field goal range, right?
Yeah.
Like that ended the game there. I did want to talk about one more thing before I, you know, wrap this particularly up, mm-hmm, game week 7 last year versus Green Bay. There was a couple of two-point conversion tries in this game.
That's right. That's right.
Then neither of them were completed for the Texans. Mm-hmm. And this was a two-point game. I don't know that I'm necessarily going to make that the reason why he lost. It did remind me. Mm-hmm. We need to revisit at some point D'Amico Ryans' decision-making on when to go, mm-hmm. when to go for it on fourth. You know, those kind of decisions, when to kick field goals. Because that didn't feel – it felt odd. I don't know that I will say it felt inherently bad, but it just felt odd all season long.
He was asked about it afterwards. I do remember that, yeah.
And I want to evaluate that somehow. I don't know if there's a metric or a way that we could – but it just feels like there needs to be some evaluation because I still think that's a place for him to develop. And I do wonder how much – that decision to go for it was built in with the relationship that he had with Bobby Slowick and maybe a trust that he has. And what does that
ultimately... And how much did that change?
What does that look like with Nick Caley?
Yeah, how much did that change? Yeah.
But I'm very curious as to what that is.
Yeah.
There you go. My rewatch of Week 7 Green Bay Packers from the 2024 season. As we gear up, we're a week away from players reporting for training camp of the 2025 NFL season. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it's about the time where we do our lunchtime confessions, and we will do those next.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.